the secret ingredients of friendship. All of us, I guess you might say, want friends. All of us are in need of being selected by someone else to be their friend. I want friends, and I need to be a friend. Now, how do you do that? Our main text comes from the book of Proverbs, chapter 18, verse 24, and we're told there that to have friends, you must make yourself friendly. Solomon, who was supposedly the wisest man ever lived, did not specify A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and so forth. These are the things that you have to do to make yourself friendly. It's a shame he didn't do that, because that's the main, I think, thing we have to know. What are the ingredients of making yourself friendly? There's nowhere in the Bible really it spells this out for you, other than when we get to the fruits of the Spirit, spoken of in the book of Galatians. And there I believe you find the ingredients of friendship. Here you find the graces of Jesus Christ mentioned. And as we look at the ingredients that you want to try to spot in somebody else to consider them as your friend, and the things you ought to build into your life to make other people want you to be as their friend, you need to understand the fruits of the Spirit. And thus far we have pointed out four of the essential ingredients required of a person who is a friend, who are a person who would make a good friend. They were meekness and peace and kindness and faithfulness. Now these are four very essential ingredients of friendship. We want to move on now to our fifth ingredient of friendship. And again, it's going to be one of the fruits of the Spirit, and it's one that the Bible speaks of as being joy. J-O-Y, joy. I guess this is most difficult of the fruits to produce. It seems there's a lot of things in life that come along that seemingly rob us of our joy. And yet it's one of the most important things, I think, to have, because happiness among friends is impossible unless you can learn to exhibit and produce joy. So that's going to be the trait this morning that we're going to look at. A friend who is a source of joy to others is a very dear friend. Now, we want people to make us happy. That's one of the reasons you pick somebody to be your friend. I will hope that if you get ready to get married and you go out and choose someone as your potential husband or wife, that you're looking for someone who can make you what? Happy. Happy. One of the things that's going to be required to make you happy is that they themselves have joy in their life, that they can cause joy in your life. And if you lack this quality, if you lack this characteristic in your life, then you're not going to make a person the kind of friend they really will treasure, the kind of friend that they really will enjoy, the kind of friend that they really need. You know, people don't like to be around a person who is a continual grouch or a whiner or a complainer or a mourner, and everything they say is negative, negative, negative. Everything they say puts you and them down in the dumps. I mean, you can be around some people, and it's like being around total depression. Now, you may have problems, I agree, but if you spread these around, you're going to drive people from you. How many people, when they open their mouth, do you hear saying something that is a complaint, that is a whine, that is a mourning? In other words, they're expressing their sorrow and they're dumping that on you. All of us get down in the dumps, but I don't think anybody expects you to dump all your downs on them. You can dump your downs on the Lord, that's fine, but when you begin to dump them on everybody you meet, and especially your closest friends, they get tired of this. It puts them down. It causes them to be sad. If all we offer people is reference to our troubles, if all we express to people would be our sorrows, if all they hear from us are really groans, if all they see in us is a sour face, a sour look, a sad face, don't be surprised if people shun you. It's just natural we withdraw from that which will cause us pain. And this kind of person is going to create tremendous amounts of pain in the life of another person. they are pained, and they want to spread that pain around. That's not the kind of people you're looking for to be a friend. That kind of person is going to have a hard time being a good friend. They always are saying, cheer me up, and they're never going to be able to cheer you up. And friendship requires a, what I might call a two-way exchange of cheerfulness. If you cannot ever mix in sunshine in the life of another person, all you can do is create more storm clouds. Don't be surprised if you're not going to have any friends. Don't be surprised if you're not selected. Don't be surprised if people shun you. Don't be surprised if people hide when they see you coming. No one wants to have their parade rained on. And that's what a person does who does not have joy as part of the fruit of their spirit. Our testimony as we sing proclaims to people, I have the joy down in my heart. Well, a lot of people have a hard time getting it out of their heart, onto their lips, into their facial expressions, into the tones of their voice. We sing songs like, I get so thrilled with Jesus, but we don't exhibit that thrill to those that we meet. And if we can't do this, then again, folks, you're going to have trouble being somebody's friend, and you're going to have a problem finding a person willing to be your friend. We preach, rejoice evermore, 1 Thessalonians 5:16. Rejoice evermore. How many words come out of your mouth are words of rejoicing? Stop and think about it. Run a little test on yourself. Before you open your mouth, check off, is this rejoicing or is this complaining? How many complaints do you speak in a minute, in an hour, in a day? Would it be 1, 10, 1,000? It's every other word, a complaint, a gripe, expression of sorrow and sadness. You know, we're supposed to rejoice evermore. And also we find in 1 John 1:4, and these things write we unto you, that your joy may be full. Now, Paul could have written, or John could have written some things that would not produce joy. I think a minister has a hard time having a real good mix in his sermons. Those who are sermons that will encourage and give joy and cheerfulness, and those that will be stern and somewhat judgmental, calling a person to repentance. So it's difficult to keep that balance and not get lopsided. All sermons on a light matter are all sermons on a heavy matter. You need to have a good mixture. Anyway, John said, I'm writing to you so that you can have full joy. Now you have some, but it's not enough. And I am one that can give you some more. Now I think that's a great attitude for a person who is a friend. You've got joy. I've got joy. And I want to give you a little bit more than you have. Nobody can ever get too much joy. We expect of Christians that they have a merry heart. We expect if they're thrilled with Jesus that they will be joyful. Proverbs chapter 17, very familiar verse. A merry heart does good like medicine. That's about the best tasting medicine I guess you could ever take. But a broken spirit dries up bones. Now, who wants to have their bones dried up when you draw near? Instead, if you have a merry heart, that's like medicine to people. And so that's the thing that makes friends attractive, or makes people attractive as friends. Not only will it dry up your bones, if you don't have a merry heart, it'll also dry up the pool of your friends real quick. Then you have Proverbs 15, 13, and 15. A merry heart makes a cheerful countenance. And he that has a merry heart hath a continual feast. Now what does your mind feast on? That which is merry or that which is sad? Whatever your heart is feasting on, that's what is going to come out of your mouth when you're around people. If you're feasting on that which is sadness, you're going to always talk sadness. If you're feasting on that which is merry, your heart or your mouth is going to speak things that will cheer people up. So what's coming out of your mouth is coming forth from your heart. A sad heart will not make a person a good friend. It really will. I'm telling you, it's going to make you distractful. It's going to make you unwanted. There's just so much a person can take in the way of sadness. If you keep dumping it on them constantly, then they aren't going to be able to find you good friendship material. To be a friend, we must be a person who I guess you might say, be fun to live with, fun to be around. A person that can give me a reason to smile, a person that can cause me to laugh. Before they leave me, I feel better than before they found me. That, to me, is a tremendous asset of a friend. In spreading joy on my mind, to me now, I call this the perfume of the perfume ministry of the believer. If you can use that expression, the perfume ministry of the believer. That is, you become a source of continual refreshment. An annoying trait that many Christians have is that they live far below the joy level that's potential. And that, of course, would be the fruit of the spirit of joy. We live far below that level. And when we greet people, do we do so with a smile or with a frown? And is the greeting one of joy, or is the greeting one of instant condemnation or instant complaint? So if you're a person who wants a friend, or you're going to pick out a friend, you want to make sure that that person has something exciting to report. That person has something delightful to share. That person has something pleasing to hear and something interesting for you to think about. It's pleasant to be around that person because they are able to dispense this kind of atmosphere in your presence. No grace like joy is able to bring hope. Nothing is able to create more faith than joy. Nothing gives a person assurance for the future like joy. Nothing creates enthusiasm like joy. And you can make or break your brother's faith. You can shatter their dreams just simply by the level of your joy. I think, sad to say, some Christians remain unpopular in church, out of church, at home. The reason is they're constantly in a state of depression, constantly complaining. Nothing is ever right. Nothing that is ever done is satisfying. Why is this so? I have a theory that is to get sympathy. Now, they think the way to get friends and the way to keep friends is to complain so much that that will create a state of sympathy for them. It's just the opposite. It will not work. And that's a bad theory. It's the way that people get attention. But it's not the kind of attention that you want. It's the way people, I guess, get their way. You complain enough and fuss enough, people will give in to you because they won't just keep you quiet. It's also, I think, a way sometimes we try to punish people. That if I'm miserable, then I want you to be miserable. If I'm unhappy, then everybody in the world should be unhappy. And of course, you see, these attitudes create an atmosphere of anxiety, an atmosphere of rejection. If you want a friend, brethren, you must learn to practice joy. And if you go pick a friend, I don't have to almost warn you on this one. You won't probably pick a friend who has no joy, who cannot dispense joy. You will probably never even consider a person a friend who does nothing but rain on your parade, because that person has, I guess you might say, an adverse effect on you all the time. They're not good friendship material. It's not that something's wrong with them. It's just that they are no longer able to dispense joy in their life. People will never be glad to see them coming. They'll not be glad to see you if it is your fault. And so we need to try to work. It's one of the most difficult, I believe, if not the most difficult, aspect of the fruit of the Spirit to produce in a person's life. Some people are more natural at this. They're more easy. It's easier for them to be happy and joyful and cheerful no matter what the circumstances. And there are other people, it gets them down. And it's hard to overcome this for people. Very difficult. If this is their personality, if they're pessimistic, if they can't deal with problems very well, it's hard for these people to change, to be different, and to be a source of sunshine and a source of comfort. It takes a tremendous amount of work, a tremendous amount of concentration. You must continually check your thoughts. It's very painful to try to outgrow this matter of lack of joy. All of us, though, are looking for sunshine friends. No matter how hard it is to be one, I'm telling you, that's what people are looking for. Not that a sunshine friend has no aches and has no pains. Not that a person has no trying circumstances, does not have heartaches, does not have problems. But that person has found the way, and this is the difficult thing, that person has found a way to reach down in their spirit for a word of cheer for you. To reach down in their spirit for a thought that will delight you. A glad tiding or an encouraging word. Not saying they don't have problems. They don't have reason not to frown. But they don't do it. They have such control that they're able to encourage you. We have always, I guess many of you have heard the song, Home, Home on the Range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. All Christians have something discouraging. I think the songwriter is living in a dream world, where seldom is heard a discouraging word. That's possible. But the sky's not cloudy every day, and that's not possible. So every Christian has a cloudy day. Every Christian has something that he could say, well, that upsets me. That bothers me. That troubles me. All Christians, if you look around hard enough, can find something that says, woe is me. But what he does, he finds a way to break through his cloud and give a ray of sunshine, give a reason to smile, give a reason to rejoice. We need to hear these kinds of encouragements from our friends. We need to learn that what we say can be like a ray of sunlight, that what we say can bring joy into a person's life. This is something a friend considers when they walk into your presence, when they are with you. They focus their thoughts not on their problems, but they focus their attention on what can they do, what can they say that'll cheer you up. And this is, again, like I say, a very difficult thing for many, many Christians to do. The Holy Spirit must work overtime on most Christians to build within them the level of joy so that they can be a refreshment to those that they meet. In other words, a friend of yours will say, before I see you and before I leave you, after I do see you, I'm going to do my best to leave a smile on your face, maybe even give you a reason to laugh, and to give you a hope, and to give you something to be happy about. Now, I mean, that becomes a goal of a person's life who is a friend. All of us are down, folks. All of us have our difficulties, and our friends know that. And that's one of the reasons we deliberately do our best to make somebody smile. We deliberate because we know you've got a problem. You know I got a problem. All of us have got problems. But the Christian is going to come and not talk about his problem. He's going to do his best to cheer you up because he knows you're just like he is. You got a problem. Now, what are some of the things you ought to major on in promoting joy in another person? Number one, a friend will also always say, I'm going to focus on being thankful. So I'm going to thank this person for something. And thanksgiving always produces joy. If you're thankful for something you do, they imply, I appreciate what you've done. You're important to me. You have not been forgotten. What you did has not been forgotten. This is one of the things that you do to bring joy into another person's life. You thank them for something. Second thing is, I think, and a lot of us don't realize this, that you might ask them to do something for you, for which you can then thank them, you see. But it also implies that they have potential, that you believe they can do a good job. In other words, by doing this, whatever it's doing, make you something, make you a quilt. That's pretty exorbitant, I know, but you can get them to do something for you that when they do it and they feel real pleased because it makes you happy, that makes them happy. So just giving them a chance to do something for you gives them a chance to make themselves important to you and express to you their appreciation of you. And so I think sometimes people get excited when you ask them to do something for you. And then when they do it, you say, I appreciate that. This is real good. And I knew you could do that. This is the kind of work you're good at. That cheers people up when you tell them things like that. Which brings the third thing, a compliment. Compliments always produce joy. Recognition gives joy. They hear from you that what is done for you by them is appreciated, is needed. This always makes a person feel better. And then probably it'd be really good to learn to share God's promises from the Scripture. The joy of the Lord is our strength, and we need to share those Scriptures that would bring some joy to their life, be encouragement to them. I think it's better to look at pie in the sky than potholes in the road. And so it's nothing wrong with talking about things the Lord will do for them and share with them what scriptures say about things. Remind them again that God knows what he's doing. God is leading their life. This encourages them. They may wonder, well, is my life going right or wrong? If God is leading, it's going right. God can't make mistakes. Build up their faith in God. That helps bring joy into them. And again, I say, I know it's easier said than done. Of all the fruits of the Spirit, I guess this one is one I have more difficulty with than any of them. I really need a lot of time spent in dealing with this, and I feel real uncomfortable even preaching on this one because I am really not one that is gifted at this area of bringing joy in other people's lives. And I know this is my greatest weakness. One of my great weaknesses in the fruits of the Spirit is that I need to be a dispenser more of joy. For I know then that it's easier said than it is done. But one of the things I found in preaching, you don't skip those sermons. You don't skip those scriptures. You don't skip those commands. You don't skip those needs. You don't skip those requirements in preaching on them just because you feel uncomfortable. Maybe I'm not reaching anybody this morning uncomfortable. Maybe I'm the only one. But still, you preach on. I mean, whether it hits the preacher or doesn't hit the preacher must preach on. And if he is guilty, well, then he has to do something about it, just like anybody else. So when you find one that kind of upsets you or bothers you or makes you feel guilty, as a preacher, that's tough. You just preach on anyway and let the Lord judge you as he would anybody else. So I don't try to dodge sermons. I have difficulty preaching because if I'm guilty, I feel real unworthy to be here for me preaching something. You ought to practice what you preach. I'm telling you, folks, this one's hard to practice. You can really major on your problems and major on your discouragements to the point that that's all you think about and that's all you talk about, not realizing that you're making yourself very unfriendly, that you're creating a worse problem. You're going to drive away what friends you have. So I don't mind confessing my faults. This is one that I have, and I have to work on this constantly. I'm a very negative person. I have to work on this, and so the Lord is hopefully able to reach me. If this is a problem with you, it is an important problem. It is an important area that we need to learn how to spread joy in the lives of other people.